Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Power Agent Spotlight, a special edition of the Power Is Now online radio. The Power Agent Spotlight is for real estate agents who stand out as the best of the best in the industry. They are real estate agents with years of experience and top performance. They have it all: professionalism, education, certifications, and results. In every industry, there are the leaders and followers, the doers and talkers, the winners and losers, and the real estate industry is no different. The Power Agent Spotlight celebrates the excellence of real estate professionals whose performance and business excellence makes them leaders and role models for real estate agents everywhere. Once a month, I will interview an experienced agent who is very successful and does it all: REOs, short sales, standard sales, commercial real estate, and even business opportunities. Now, if you are new to real estate and you're already performing like a seasoned pro, I would like to hear from you. Exceptions will be made for extraordinary agents who are new in the business. In the spotlight, we're going to hear about how they got their start in real estate, the lessons they have learned, their triumphs and defeats, their tactics and strategies for success. We're going to hear about their journey in the real estate business and get some real advice on what it takes to make it to the top. So sit back and relax as we listen and learn from the best in the business right here, right now, on the Power Is Now online radio, the Power Agent Spotlight. Welcome to the Power Agent Spotlight. Today in the spotlight is Rochelle Jones, agent from Keller Williams in the greater Northwest Houston, Texas. Rochelle Jones is a native Californian who has made Houston, Texas her home since 1994. Since obtaining her real estate license in 2006, she has immersed herself in the industry. Over the past 4 years, Jones has concentrated in REO transactions and boasts an ample client list and a range of specific skill sets to support her qualifications in this much-needed area. Today, Jones expertly services a host of REO clients with a variety of end goals and a range of needs. Because her fully staffed office provides comprehensive services, she anticipates that KWN will be positioned for growth and will continue to provide individualized attention to clients on an ongoing basis. In Jones' time away from closing deals, she proctors regular courses on home ownership, foreclosure prevention, and investment purchases. Jones has a full-time dedicated team to assist in servicing all of her clients' individual needs. Additionally, Jones is an active and participating member of NAREP, and ARIA. She's also a member of NRBA and the Five Stars Force. She regularly partners with local churches and nonprofit organizations to provide knowledge, expertise, and awareness of housing trends that help buyers and sellers weather the difficulties of a difficult market in a staggering economy. She has partnered with the housing committees to provide consultation services and has worked with the Katy Economic Development Commission towards the aim of making local communities better and happier places for citizens. Rochelle is the proud mother of Logan Millen Jones, an active four-year-old who gives her reason for working hard every day. Thank you, Rochelle, for being on the Power Is Now Agent Spotlight today.
It is truly my pleasure. Thank you, Eric, for having me.
Well, the pleasure is all mine. You know, I have been wanting to do something like this for you for a long time because you have been a loyal listener and follower of the Power Is Now online radio from the very beginning. And in addition to that, you've always been so encouraging and so upbeat. And I just had to find out what makes this lady tick. What keeps her on fire and positive all the time? And then to find out that you're a top agent with Keller Williams, well, that makes you an automatic shoe-in in being on the Power Agent Spotlight today. So thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to be with us today.
My pleasure, Eric.
Well, one of the traditions we have on the Power Agent Spotlight, in fact, on the Power Is Now, is we ask all of our guests, what does the phrase "the power is now" means to them in the context of who they are as a real estate professional, as a citizen of this country, as a mother or a father? What does the phrase "the power is now" means to you, Rochelle?
You know, it's funny, Eric, because that can change on a daily basis. And when I close my eyes and think about it without sincerity, there are two words that come to mind, and it's own it, own it, own it. The power now means that you're in control and you need to own it, whether it's personal, whether it's professional, whether it's spiritual, just own it. Take change, allow change, be the cause of change, and whatever it is that you're touching, own it.
Wow. That is a great message. You really can't leverage the power you have until you own it anyway, right?
Right. Right.
So.
And it takes for you to embrace ownership of whatever it is to say that it is the power, it is now, and putting those two things together, saying, you know, I own this, and I'll see it through until the next round of the power is now.
Well, it is the power, it is now, and I own it.
Right, exactly.
The slogan of the power is now. It is the power, it is now, and we own it.
I own it.
Right. Well, that's a great Power Is Now statement. Thank you for sharing. And again, thank you for being on the call today. Folks, Rochelle Jones is here to share her story. We're going to learn about how she got her start in the business, her experience, her challenges. We're going to learn about her team, organization, some of her results, and maybe not just her results, but her successes and her plans for the future. And lastly, some advice, some words of encouragement. So I'm really looking forward to hearing from Rochelle Jones in just a few minutes. So, but what I want to do right now is give you an opportunity, folks who are listening out there, to call your friends. Jump on the line right now. Send them a text message. Poke them with your Facebook, whatever you got to do, get their attention and tell them to get on the line. Go online or to jump on the telephone and listen to Rochelle Jones on the Power Agent Spotlight. I promise you will not be disappointed because the Power Agent Spotlight is designed to empower, to inspire, to motivate, and to help others who may be struggling right now. And for those who are not struggling, well, to encourage them to pay it forward and to help someone else make it in this business, this great business we've all been blessed to be a part of. So hang in there with us for just a minute on a commercial break. We'll be right back. Please reach out to your friends. We'll be right back right after this commercial break. And we're back. So we're back with Rochelle Jones, native Californian, out there in Houston, Texas, making things happen. And she's on the Power Agent Spotlight. And our first question to Rochelle is, 2006, Rochelle, you got started in this business during a very, very difficult time as the economy was heading up to a crash in 2008 and things were kind of going south. you jumped into this game. First, tell us, what were you doing before you became a real estate agent?
Sure, I'd love to. I had spent the last 15 years prior to joining the real estate industry in telecommunications, and everything from the latest and greatest, which I started when pagers were the most advanced form of technology, and ended my career in telecommunications when wireless took on and took over the industry, and worked in vast responsibilities and capacities, everything from call center management to efficiency consulting and expertise, primarily training and development, organizational design is where I spent the majority of my time.
Wow, so you were a tech person, really.
Well, more so in facilitation and education. We did do some technical training, but it was more so facilitation, doing sales training, doing some technical training, and then ultimately working on what we call performance solutions, looking at opportunities on how to handle an industry that is going through a extreme change. And at the time, you know, many companies were merging and being acquired, and I saw that firsthand multiple times. Only to know that, you know, the writing was on the wall, that we would end up in a day where you could buy a cell phone for free, basically, and have service at $30 a month, and just seeing that evolve from its infancy into its current state.
So seeing this happening in your industry, you made a conscious, rational decision to sell real estate. In a time where things were a little challenging. Now, please tell me, was this a conscious, rational decision to go sell real estate? Didn't you have your husband, your family members telling you to do something else? You know, because a lot of people don't look at real estate as the plan, more like a fallback plan. What was it to you?
You know, it was. My needle in the haystack really is what it was. I had always had a desire to do it, and I found myself when someone said that they were moving or buying a home, I was excited for them and said, oh, you should call this realtor, and this is where you want to go and look, and what neighborhoods are you interested in? And I was immediately engaged and interested in their transaction, so I knew I had a natural born love for it. At the time, like you said, in 2006, people were like, you are crazy. And I had a phenomenal, phenomenal job. I traveled and got to see pretty much every state in the United States. And I worked for a great company. I had a great support team. And it was faith. It was truly stepping out on faith and just asking the Lord to guide me and to make sure that my steps were ordered and that I was in order with those steps, and it's been faith, grace, and mercy that certainly has kept me here.
Oh, so it was a partnership, a total of four of you guys, right?
Yeah. Well, really one. When we sum it all up, there's just one
okay.
Here.
Well, now, with you, faith, grace, and mercy, how did you guys all get along? No, just kidding. But tell me, did you sell anything prior to this? I mean, you were doing training and that kind of thing. Did you have any sales experience at all before you tried to sell real estate?
Not really, no. I had some exposure to some degree of sales training, basically textbook teaching others on what they should be doing, and they say those who can't should teach. So that would be my experience with it. So it was a whole new gamut. It was a whole new game. And really, when you think about real estate, although we're qualified or referred to as salespeople, that really is just the name of the transaction. It's a sale. But we are so many other things within that. We're a counselor. We're a confidant. We're a friend. You know, sometimes we're, you know, the deliverer of bad news. And so the sale part of it is only one nugget. It's really the consultant that you are. And I know a lot of real estate agents will choose to put that on a name badge or on a resume. And if you're really good at it, that's what you're doing. You're consulting on every level. And that's the way that I embraced it, was what's the need, how am I going to aid to that need, and what can I do at my absolute best to make this incredible transaction, whether it's a purchase or a sale, as painless as possible for the person on the other end. And that's where my initial interest came in. And I had recently had purchased a home myself, and while I thought I had an awesome real estate agent, once I finished real estate school, I realized, wow, I should never refer anyone else to that agent again. And I never did, of course, because I then was the better choice. But it's just, you know, it is it's so many hats that we wear in this business that I think it's easy for us to go into a box of I'm in real estate sales, but really that's the last thing you do is sell it. It's everything that you do that leads you to the race.
Well, what a great point, and it's so true that really it was all your natural abilities, your personality, your willingness to help, and I think being a trainer also you have to be a good listener so you can make sure the person is getting what you're trying to teach or share. And so really the last thing you needed was some experience selling something part-time, like, I don't know, cosmetics, you know, to prepare yourself to sell real estate. So you really don't have to be a salesperson, but you need to be a person that that can articulate, that can be a friend, that can be a counselor, that can understand the needs that people are having. And you have that naturally doing the job you were doing.
I would agree with that. And I think if you come into this business with the ability to care, that everything else is secondary. If you come into this business and you're a great salesman and you can shut your phone off at 5 o'clock and go home and eat with your family, then you'll survive in this business, but you won't be great at it. But if you come into this business with the ability to care, you'll do great.
Wow. So tell me, you were working, you had a job, you were getting a paycheck. How often did you get paid? Every week, every 2 weeks?
I got paid every 2 weeks. And I have to tell you, every 2 weeks, and I had a very lucrative salary, Eric. So when people found out that I, on my own accord, was leaving my job, they were like, "Are you crazy? I mean, have you read the newspaper? Have you watched the news?
Right.
Look at this article I just read. You know, this is not what you want to do right now." And, you know, I'm a survivor.
That's what you are. Okay. Michelle, you were getting all of this negative feedback from others. Don't do it. They were afraid for you because of the economy and everything that was going on. But yet you made a decision to move forward anyway. Tell me about that moment where it was just you made a decision. There was no turning back. You were moving forward. Where were you? What were you going through, you know, when you made that decision?
And that's a great question. Thanks, Eric. Well, in 2006, I got my license, and that was a result of going through many mergers, acquisitions, changes, and seeing it firsthand, realizing that I knew that I would be making a change soon, and I didn't know in what capacity. So in 2006, when I initially got my license, I was still working my job and also playing with real estate at the time. That February of 2007, I attended my first Keller Williams family reunion, and it was just so incredible and amazing. And I was amongst people throughout the nation that had mega careers, successful careers, and the information was just being shared and just flowing throughout the entire convention. And when I left there, I said, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this 100%. You know, again, I'm stepping out on faith, but I knew it was the right thing. And when I returned to work, I believe that following Monday, I put in notice and said, I'm leaving. And I was dedicated and committed to building a long-lasting real estate career.
Wow. Well, congratulations on having, you know, faith in yourself and I assume the encouragement you got from the group there at Keller Williams was what you needed, because you certainly weren't getting it from your friends and others that were surrounding you at work and maybe at home. What are they saying now?
Well, you know, they're very supportive these days, and where it's funny because the market certainly, you know, has not necessarily shown any great vital signs for someone who might be thinking about it right now. Real estate is one of those careers that's rewarding in the fact that you truly get out of it what you put into it. And that's in any given climate of where we are in an economy, in our housing industry. If you put 100% into it, you will get 100% back. Now, it may not be a quick pay-it-forward moment, and you have to be patient with that and consistent with that, but you definitely get out of this business what you put into it. And you can't say that for every job or career that you've ever had.
No, you're absolutely right. I think that applies to, you know, all of business and even jobs where you are getting a salary. You get out of it what you put into it. Well, folks, as you can see, this is going to be an interesting story, and we are just getting started. Rochelle Jones left a high-paying job where she was flying all over the country and, you know, running things and basically had a great life, but was tired of going through acquisition after acquisition and wanted a piece of the entrepreneurial dream, I guess. Would you say, Rochelle, the entrepreneurial dream? Because at this point, were you ever self-employed at this point in your career? Have you ever been on your own like this?
Not in this capacity. Mm-hmm. When I was 19, I ventured out and sold perfume bottles, and it's actually quite funny to tell you. You had asked me if I had sales experience, and I totally forgot about this until you asked this question. If you ever remember back in the late 80s when people would walk down the street and ask if you wanted to buy a bottle of perfume that smelled just like the real stuff, that was me,
right.
And I actually made it to the level of branch manager with that. So, but I was 19. So, a business owner, maybe, it qualifies. Entrepreneur,
right.
Maybe not so much, yeah.
Right. Well, you are there now, and I take my hat off to you for having the courage to leave a job and to sell real estate during a challenging time. And I'm looking forward to hearing more about your experience after you made that leap. So, folks, we're going to take just a one-minute break here. And when we come back, we're going to hear about her experience. So she got the courage. She went with an organization, Keller Williams, who encouraged her and motivated her to step out there and to resign and to come to work selling real estate full time. What was her experience? How challenging was it when she first started? And so we'll find this out in just a few minutes. We'll be right back right after this break. And we're back with Rochelle Jones. And Rochelle, I have to tell you, I'm chuckling a little bit at you selling perfume. I can picture you right now on the street selling perfume. And did you spray some on yourself first to try to lure people in?
You know, I had so many different sales pitches. It was crazy. If you told me you were allergic, I'd tell you you spray it on your clothes and it never touched your body. There was some provocative opportunities with it. There were if there was an opportunity, if you have blue eyes and I told you look great in white diamonds, and you know, it was just it's funny because I mean perfume is no commodity, and here I am walking down the street with a knockoff perfume on top of that.
Right.
So yeah, it's funny. I very rarely go to that experience, but I'm glad you brought it out. I'll get a laugh out of this the next couple of days.
So the little bit of experience you had selling with the great deal of experience you had through training and facilitation, and trainers I think are worth their weight in gold. They are truly critical to any business. your sales force, your ability to move product, to be efficient, all begins with training, and you need great trainers to make that happen. So I think trainers can make great salespeople, because as you've pointed out already, sales is really a very small part of this whole transaction. So let's talk about your experience. You made the leap of faith and went to work straight commissioned for Keller Williams. First, we have to ask you, why Keller Williams? I'm certain you checked out other organizations like Century 21, Coldwell Banker, ERA. There are so many franchises out there to work for. Why Keller Williams?
You know, I'm very glad you asked that as well, Eric, because Keller Williams was actually not even on my list of companies to interview with. During an interview with another very large firm, I ran into an individual that I knew, and we were talking just about, you know, how things were going, and he said to me, "Have you looked at Keller Williams?" And I said, "Keller who?" And he said, "Keller Williams." And he said, "They have great training." So being that I had a background in training and development, that was like a golden ticket for me. So I made an appointment to interview with them, learned about the corporate culture, and when they said our corporate model is God and family first, business second, for me, I was in the right place.
Wow. That did it for you.
That was enough. I knew. You know, I told you it was a faith-bound move for me anyway, and I just needed to stay on the path that I was being directed, and that clearly was a welcome sign for me.
Now, you know that everyone can write a great model, a great, you know, mission statement, a great vision statement, but it's another thing to live up to it. I realize you could be biased here, being an employee or an agent for Keller Williams, but can you tell us, do they live up to that theme or motto, God and family first, business second?
Absolutely. And I can't even state it with words. I told you, you know, when I came back from family reunion that I was convinced I needed to quit my lucrative job. And there was prayer breakfast. There was motivational moments. And, you know, having worked in the corporate environment for so long where if you even so much say the word God, you were, you know, subject to termination, and for someone to start, you know, a convention office prayer, to have a prayer breakfast, and to have the leaders of your company sit up and say, it is God and family first, and then your business, and to see it live through our culture and, you know, through community, it just, for me, I know it's not for everyone. Some people look for the best opportunity being their bottom line. And, you know, if they're not spiritual or religious, you know, maybe it will not strike them in the same accord. For me, it was my foundation, and it was every bit of what I needed to know exactly where I was supposed to be. And till this day, it's still being the model, the mantra, the lifestyle of Keller Williams.
Well, it seems to me that your other partners probably outvoted you and made you go there, you know, faith, grace, and mercy.
They did. Absolutely. They did.
Well, so Keller Williams, they got you, and man, did they get you, because you are a superstar there, but I'm certain it wasn't that easy when you got started. Tell us about your experience. How tough was it getting started? Even with great training that they were providing you, how tough was it? When did you make your first sale? Tell us about it, how tough it was. Now, I'm just making an assumption here that it was tough. You know, you could tell me that it wasn't tough at all, and that you hit the street running and became top producer your first month. Whatever the story is, we want to know.
Well, you know, I would love for that to be the story, but it's not. It wasn't easy. I luckily was surrounded around, you know, other agents and successful brokers that were very giving, that were willing to take you, you know, under their wing and show you the ropes, and, you know, to go on a listing appointment with someone was never, you know, feasible doubt. And I'm with the second Keller Williams office now, the original Keller Williams office that I started with. I left a few years ago for REO Opportunity. They're still, you know, certainly my first family. I was blessed to be around people who were successful, and they could show me exactly what they were doing to be successful. Well, any new agent that is looking for business, one of the things I found out very early was that in the state of Texas, you get commission on leases. If you find someone a home, you get half of the first month's rent. So I really, when I was doing it part-time, went after leases. And then when I started doing property desk and things of that nature, my very first transaction was a $350,000 sale. Now, for some folks that are listening right now, they're going to say, oh, that's nothing. But when you're talking about a market where the average price point is about $90,000 to $100,000, that $350,000 was like a golden ticket. And initially it was, until I found out that it was a short sale. And when I start saying, what's a short sale? Everyone was like, I don't know. What's a short sale? I don't know. What's a short sale? So we found out what a short sale was. We were going to go through with it. Everything's plummeting and moving along. Then I found out that the short sale had been foreclosed on by the HOA. Wow. We just got approval from the bank after 3 months to sell this property, and now I've got to deal with an HOA. And in the midst of all this, the listing agent decided that they didn't want to be in the business anymore. The broker decided that they were not going to be in the business anymore, and I got involved with an intermediary transaction. So when you say, was it easy, or how did I get into it, I was truly baptized by fire.
Well, Rochelle, you've got to be kidding me. This is
that
your first
transaction. That was my first closed sale, Eric. My first closed sale was that transaction.
So let me make sure I have this right. $350,000, which is like four times the normal sales transaction in the market there. So I could just imagine when you got that listing, you came back to the office jumping up and down and screaming, only then to find out that the HOA had foreclosed on the property. So you didn't even have a deal anymore, you probably thought, right?
I said, what is it going to take? What is it going to take?
Man, so you began here, no experience really, right? I mean, you're still new, having to negotiate a short sale with the HOA. Did they actually take possession? How does it work out there? Did they actually take possession on that property, or what happened?
They did not assume first lien position, but they became the seller. It was a very unique situation because the short sale authorization letter was between the previous homeowner and the bank, saying you can sell it short, but the title now was conveyed to the HOA. And so who actually signed the documents was the HOA. So it was the most complicated transaction I've ever been involved in, and it was a great learning opportunity. Everyone in my office said, honey, that's never going to close. That's never going to close. And like I said, it was preparing me for today. It was saying that don't look at a stop sign as an inability to move forward.
All right.
At it as a time for observation and maybe to reassess your route. And that's what I did. And I got that home closed with no problems thereafter.
Yeah, I mean, everything else was a cakewalk for you, wasn't it, after that? My goodness.
Right.
So how long did it take you to close that transaction, to work through the short sale process? And actually, during that time, I mean, short sales weren't really that popular, right? I mean, no one really wanted to do it.
Exactly. It was the beginning of 07. No one was doing it at the beginning, at the start of 07, at least not in Texas. We didn't have, you know, the California bubble, but they were not commonplace at all. So the lender, basically I harassed them on a daily basis because during that time, we'll probably all recall that you had to send one document 50 times in order for them to say that they actually received it. And you know, luckily I was, you know, new enough and eager enough to be relentless, and that's what it took. It took from the time we contracted, which was the very beginning of January, we were closed by March 27th.
Wow. So you closed that transaction in 3 months.
I did.
Wow. So what a way to introduce yourself to your team and to the real estate industry. You know, Rochelle Jones, I'm here. And to be able to not only, and I assume since that transaction was almost four times the average sale, you're probably the top producer of the month it closed, right?
You know what? I think I was, and I had, you know, made some concessions on commissions because my client, the buyer, was having to pick up some extra costs. So things I did that you just learn that, you know, your time is worth your money. And certainly I think that sometimes we work out of desperation instead of, you know, absolute worthiness. And I've learned that lesson today to say that sometimes you say no. Even some people will say a little bit of money is more than no money. That's not true. It's not true.
So you've learned to know your value, you know, and your worth, and you refuse to work for less than what you are worth. Would that be an accurate statement?
Absolutely.
That's a great first sale, a great victory, and what could have easily been a great defeat. Tell us about some of the other challenges that you experienced while getting started. And did you ever think about quitting at any point in the beginning of your career because it had gotten so difficult?
Oh, man. I joke on my team now, come in and say, I quit. I'm doing a no-call, no-show. Fire me. And I won't be back next week. So, you know, that's a natural emotion to feel defeated at times. And so long as you can swallow that and digest it and allow it to build strength, then the next day will be better. So I still sometimes feel that way, Eric. There are times where I'm like, oh, my goodness, you know, I could be eating at Ruth Chris's with a corporate credit card right now, racking up miles to go to Hawaii. And instead, you know, I'm, you know, playing chicken with the rat that's looking me dead in my face to say, who you coming in? Because I'm not leaving, you know. So it's an emotion that happens. It's just how you embrace it. You know, I'm going to go back to your phrase, which is the power is now. Well, who's in control of that? You are. So right. I feel that on some days, just, you know, here and there. But there was one point where I actually updated my resume. And I had a consulting firm, a very large and popular consulting firm, reach out to me, and I did a telephone interview, and the opportunity that they were presenting was dynamite. I could work from home. I didn't have to travel as much, but there was a little bit of travel, and the pay was just superb. And then I had to go back and realize that when I worked in corporate America, that I worked really hard and committed 110%, but the bottom line, the end result, was it was always for someone else, and it was always for something else. And if I just reinvented myself and put a little bit more energy and effort into what I was doing, that I would get those same returns, but for me and my business. It's a bitter pill to swallow when you're in that place, and especially, you know, if you've got bills that are looking at you or if you've got any type of changed lifestyle, you know, finances will certainly make you think twice about being in this business, but often it is just, it's, you know, intended to be a downplay for you, and you have to overcome that and say, what am I going to do differently, and how am I going to make this work, instead of how am I going to get out of this hole? How am I going to build me a new palace below sea level is what I need to do. And then I'll worry about how I'm going to float to the top later.
So tell me about that moment, because there were some things, obviously, that led to the point where you decided to update your resume engage a headhunter in a very real conversation, go through multiple interviews, and then get an offer, there had to be some events or circumstances that led you to that point. And yet you talked yourself out of taking that job. What was going on that took you to that point? This must have been a low point in the beginning of your career.
It was. I after having been involved with that first short sale and seeing that it was going to become a very normal transaction, time to come, I began to specialize in short sales. You know, you have to have thick skin to do that. Now it's a lot easier than what it was in 2007. Back then, you had to have thick skin because you were waiting 6 months before you even got an approval. And could the buyer, was the buyer, you know, in 30% of the cases, maybe the buyer was sticking around. But otherwise, right when you got your approval letter, they were walking. They signed something else. So I was frustrated with the process of getting the short sale done. And then I encountered two homeowners who, back-to-back, who I had busted my tail for, who decided in the 12th hour that they would rather foreclose than to short sale. And one was for a stupid reason. It was for an inspection. She didn't want to get up Saturday morning at 9 o'clock. We had already been approved by the bank. She didn't want to get up at 9 o'clock in the morning to allow the buyer to come in to inspect. And at that point, I realized I had put in 6 months of tiring work and that I was not going to see a payday, that my efforts were not aligned with my financial return. And I was frustrated. I mean, it literally beat me up. And I was ready at that point. I was like, and it happened twice, like back to back with two different clients. The other lady felt like she wasn't getting any money out of it, and she wanted a portion of my commission. And, you know, it was like, you've got to be kidding me. It can't be this hard. The awakening moment for me, though, was, you know, because we're in Houston, we were so close to, you know, New Orleans, and with everything that happened in Katrina, we still had a lot of folks that were migrating to Houston, and I was able to secure a home for a family that had lost everything, and they had been denied previous home ownership, and it was that transaction that said, fight harder, Rochelle. Go harder, Rochelle. There are people out there who need you, who appreciate you. And, and in that transaction, I actually waived my commission because they didn't have any money. And so I wasn't getting paid, but it was the greatest reward I could ever imagine. And it reminds me even today of, you know, why I'm still here, because there are people just like that family that need us in some capacity. And thank goodness that they came into my life, because, you know, you'd probably catch me in a first-class seat flying to Chicago tomorrow morning.
Wow. Well, what a great story. And it's interesting how that it wasn't closing another deal that put some money in your pocket that turned you around. It was helping someone else who was in a perhaps greater situation, had a greater need than your own circumstances. And that event motivated you to fight harder, to keep pushing forward. Many people, after experiencing back-to-back cancellations and working with difficult clients, and then on top of that feeling the financial pressure and not having any money coming in, think they would have taken that job, Rochelle. They would have taken that job and been on that plane with you to Chicago, first class. But you decided to hang in there, and that's what makes you, isn't it? I mean, you are a unique individual. There are no more Rochelle Jones out there, is there? I mean, they just, when God made you, he broke the mold, didn't he?
You know, that's
go ahead.
There are people better than me out there, Eric.
All right.
You know, as much as I appreciate the compliment, and, you know, it's in us. It's in each and every one of us. It's just, you know, whether or not we allow it to lay dormant, or if we choose to allow some other character or behavior be our representation of who we are.
Well, somehow you were able to find the strength to hang in there. You know, I was reading a report at what point there were, I forget, a million agents that were members of NAR, and then that number dropped down to like 700,000. I mean, during that period, a lot of real estate agents left the business because it got so difficult. And but you know what they say, the cream always rises to the top. Your experience was challenging, but at the same time, you turned that challenge into a success, into victory, and I take my hat off to you for that. Well, folks, we just heard about her beginning, her experience, and now we're going to move into her tactics and strategies. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, more from Rochelle Jones about how she makes it happen each and every day, her tactics and strategies as a real estate professional. Right here, right now, on The Power Is Now. We'll be right back. And we're back with Rochelle Jones, agent extraordinaire. Folks, I don't know about you, but I just, her stock just keeps going up. It keeps going up. She is really a unique person. And first of all, we already know why she has an advantage on this business, because she's got three other partners, Faith, Grace, and Mercy. You know, there's another agent out there that operates in the same vein. Her name is Alicia Chen. You might want to check out her Power Agent Spotlight at an interview we did last month, and you'll find some similarities in this conversation. Well, Rochelle, thank you for sharing so far. Just some great information, your beginning, your experience, and now we're down to your tactics and strategies. What do you do as an agent that makes you so unique from other agents? Why do people want to work with you? And then what is the strategy? What is the strategy? What are the tactics that you're doing to be successful?
Well, I think, first of all, on my traditional business, 90% of my business is referral-based. So the first strategy and tactic is we're going to go back to own it. Own it. If you do it right. If you can't do it, say, I can't do it. There are times where you know at the beginning of a transaction that you just can't and you shouldn't, and you try and you fail. I've been there. Mm. I've done it. And I get no referrals from those clients. So there, it has no pay it forward further down the future. So, so if you can't do it, they will respect that you can and they'll understand. I think that I'm brutally honest, and I know my lane. I know that I am not the right realtor for everyone. And part of the consulting phase of this business is identifying key factors and expectations. And as real estate professionals, we have the right to say, no, I don't want to work with you. And especially if you feel it's going to be, you know, a bad experience, feel confident up front and say, I cannot work with you. Looking at what your needs are, if you expect a phone call every 20 minutes, I'm not your girl. If you expect, you know, an email every single night, I'm not your girl. But what I will do is if you tell me what your needs are in finding a home or selling a home and what your expectations are, I will align that with the services that I'm willing to provide and tell you whether or not we're a good fit to work together. If I'm not a good fit, I'll even refer it out and say maybe there's someone else that you'll be better suited with working with. And I've learned that only from failure of trying to do it all and being working out of that mindset of scarcity, and that if I don't do it, I'm not going to get a paycheck. Well, if at the end of it my paycheck was never worth it and I feel beat up and I feel like I never want to see you again, then I'd rather say that up front and spend that time vested where it's actually going to be fruitful for me in the future. So number one, what's my strategy and my tactic is take on what I know I can take on. leave alone what I know I should leave alone. And that's not easy, but it's necessary. Very basic, you know, lead generation, whether you're, you know, a large percentage of my business is REO. So lead generation means, you know, reaching back to clients or, you know, touching bases with asset managers. You know, making sure that they know I'm still here. I'm still here and ready, willing, and looking forward to working with you. Or if it's, you know, going after more short sales. We still do short sales even after some of those horror stories. We still do short sales. And lead generation also encompasses, you know, what pillar of business do you want to be in that you may not already be in? And they say you eat an elephant one bite at a time. So we chew our elephant on a daily basis and sharpen our saw and make sure that we're enhancing our knowledge. You know, there's so many free blogs out there. Eric, you are an incredible partner to the real estate community. Like you said, I've been with you from the beginning, and I'm never disappointed. There is never a call that you have offered that has not enriched my business in some capacity. And even if it was specific on lending, and someone says, well, I'm not a lender. Well, you need to know because your clients need lenders, and you need to be abreast of what the changes are in FHA guidelines and compliance. You need to know that because you're a disservice to your clients if you don't. If you always have to say, call your lender, call your inspector, call this person. Now, don't be the expert on those things, stay in your lane. But you should know. You should have basic common knowledge that will guide you and partner you, with you, the best people in the industry, to get the transaction closed. And so we get to basics. We read daily news. We read several blogs. We read national news. Anything related to the housing industry, we want to have knowledge of it. You know, you hear a lot of people talk about the election coming up and what that means. Well, a lot of people don't even understand, well, why does politics have anything to do with housing? You need to know that. And when your client asks you, will this have an impact, you can speak to it from an opinionated perspective, obviously, but intelligently.
Well, this is good stuff, Rochelle, and you said a lot, and I also appreciate your kind words about the program and on the Power Is Now, but this is not the Power Is Now spotlight. This is the Power Agent spotlight, and you, my dear, are on the spotlight. You know, one of the things you said that is resonating with me here that I want you just to expand upon for our listeners, and that is the mindset of scarcity. The mindset of scarcity. What do you mean by that?
Well, there is enough for everyone. Actually, there's more than enough for everyone that intends on getting it. Again, I'm gonna talk about REO because, I'll try not to jump ahead too much here. But if you try to go to an REO broker and say, "How'd you get in? What'd you do?" Yeah, good luck with that. And it comes from the mindset of if I tell you what to do or how I'm doing it, you become a competitor. Well, you know, my philosophy on competition is we're only competing if there's one. If there's two, they just became enough for both of us. And your blessings come not from how much you want, but from how much you give. And so many people operate in a mindset of it's mine, it's mine, it's mine. And that can be in any lane of business, not just REO. It could be traditional rental car sales if you want to. But if you operate in a mindset that this is all that I have, that's all you'll ever get. You will be confined to only what you see. And in an environment that we work in commission only, it's a natural recourse to take. I got to protect my boundaries. This is my sandbox, and you can look and admire the castle that I've built, but you cannot come and play in it. And that's just wrong. It's just wrong.
Wow. Well, that's so true. There is plenty of opportunity, and that mindset of scarcity only really makes you look bad.
And it keeps you, you can never excel. You'll only be in space.
That's right. That's right. You can't excel. It makes you look better. It isolates you then, too, because you can do more things with two than you can with one. And you never know, in sharing something with someone else, you might get something in return, knowledge about something that you didn't know that could help you grow your business. And I think that's a great phrase, the mindset of scarcity is something that's a mindset you do not want to have. You talked about in lead generation making contact with asset managers, and I remember people talking about in 2007, 2008 that if you didn't get in, you were too late. In fact, some prominent brokers that I know, and they know who they are, have told me, some even on the show, that if you're not in now, you're done. There's no more REO for anybody. And this was a couple years ago. We've been doing this show since August of 2009. Yet we have this sophisticated, highly articulate, and powerful woman in Houston, Texas, jumped in the REO game in 2007. How did that happen?
Well, you know, I refused to believe I was going to be an REO anything. And I actually had a colleague of mine in Northern California give me a call that I used to work with in the telecommunications field. And he said, "Hey, Rochelle, you know, what are you doing now? I need you to come and do some training for my team." And I said, "I'm sorry, I don't do training anymore. I'm in real estate." "That's great. I'm in real estate, and I really need you to come and do some training for my team." And he was doing REO and doing very well. It was California. And I said, "Well, I'll come and do an assessment. We call them 360s. I'll come and do a 360, kind of tell you, you know, your SWOT analysis and where your strengths are and what you need to be doing differently." And so I did that for 2 weeks. The business grew within 3 months, like 40%.
Now, Rochelle, I think I've just lost audio. Folks, just hang in there with us. Rochelle, are you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
I can hear you now. All right, so we just lost a little bit of an audio. So you were talking about going down and doing a 360, a SWOT analysis for your friend up north, I believe.
Right. And his business grew by about 40% in 3 months. Then, another buddy called me, and they're like, "Please, can you come and do an analysis on my team?" And, you know, I found myself back in the role of training and doing analysis. And so when I got back, my friend called and said, "Rochelle, you really need to build you an REO team." And I was like, "No, you know, I'm hearing it's dry now and that, you know, you can't get in." He's like, "Rochelle, you can do it. You can do it." So I was pregnant at the time, and I thought, "Well, you know, I should do this REO thing. The banks are only open Monday through Friday. I can have a good quality of life. I don't have to work on weekends. Let me jump into this REO thing." And you listen to everyone about how to get into it, what to do, and I think the first thing that people tell you to do is start doing BPOs, right? That's kind of like the coined answer. Do BPOs. Go and do a bunch of BPOs. Sign up with all these companies, do BPOs. Now, I don't disagree with that, but it's not for the intended purpose. You do BPOs so that you learn how to properly value so that when you start getting graded on your BPO price to sales price that you're the expert. But it really rarely actually even leads to a listing. But I played by the rules. Then I start going to the conferences, and, you know, the very first thing I did is what a rookie person would do was the minute I saw an asset manager, run and chase them down, "Hi, hire me, pick me, and learned that that was the very wrong thing to do. And then instead of looking for asset managers at the conference, I realized that my value was talking to successful agents, listening to what they were doing good, listening to what changes they needed to make, and listening to what their plans were for the future. And I started building my model around that. And that's when I decided to leave the Keller Williams office that I was with, because there were already quite a few REO brokers in that office, and I realized that my opportunities were limited. So in order for me to grow my business, I needed to move. So I had two major things going on at one time. Number one, I was trying to break into an industry that there were trolls at the gate saying, "You can't cross this bridge." And I was moving to a new location where I had absolutely no experience or, you know, any numbers that supported anything. So it was a challenging year, but I kept going to the conferences. I kept talking to other agents. I kept networking and saying, you know, if there's anything I could do, if there's anything I can do. And then when that opportunity comes, you have to be ready for it. And, you know, I'll tell you, I have had my heart broken by, you know, some large servicers who, you know, I thought for sure I, you know, had gained their business, and only to find out that I didn't. But the purpose in that was to prepare me for not getting ready when you get it, but be ready to handle it when you get it. Don't think of preparation as when I get it, I'll get ready. Be ready and handle it and own it so that you can get more. And so that was a very, very hard lesson, but valuable. And it was, you know, it was perseverance. It was not asking for business every time I saw someone, but simply becoming educated, making sure that I could get, you know, some certifications and designations, and not just because they promised 30 listings in 30 days. You got to be careful of that in this business, and everybody wants a piece of your pie, but realizing the quality of information, and I didn't need to walk away with an empty promise that I was going to walk away with an asset. I needed to walk away with education and knowledge that will allow me to be better in my field. And if I could do that, then I'd pay $399 for your course. But other than that, I didn't have an expectation that I was going to get an assignment from signing up with, you know, this week's pick of the week.
Sure. Well, you got your education from talking to successful agents in REO. It's interesting. You said that, you know, you got your you got the information you needed, or the training you needed, the start you needed, by talking to those people who are already successful, who are already doing it, and they're willing to share their knowledge. Is there any particular agent you want to name now that perhaps was instrumental in helping you get started in REO?
You know, the very first one that I would have to give credit to is a gentleman named Ramel Williams.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because I called him tonight. I just got a new client who I can't name today, but I just got a new client that I'm really excited to service. And I called him and I said, Ramel, you know, because you're unselfish and you said this is what you need to do, Rochelle, and he's in my own marketplace. He's right in my own backyard. I just wanted to thank him. And I was like, I just want to thank you, and please know that I've paid it forward, and there have been many of agents who have called me, agents in my own marketplace, that there's not a mindset of scarcity. So he would be the first one that I would have to give, like, super kudos to. And there's so many, Eric, because, you know, like I said, when you go to Five Star, REO Expo, REO Mag, NRBA, you go to these conferences, and you're looking for someone who can help grow your business. And realistically, the most powerful people you have in your direct reach are brokers and agents.
Not asset managers. Not asset managers.
You know, I'm not going to downplay the asset managers and the vendor managers, because they are the decision makers. But you know how often a really good REO, when you're talking to an asset manager and you're like, just, you know, doing your checkpoint, this is what's going on, and they say to you, you know, I wish I had someone just like you in, you know, Kalamazoo.
Right.
And you go, wow, you know, it just so happens I know someone in Kalamazoo. That is absolute power. And I can't tell you how many times that has happened for me, where recommendations have come from other agents. And, you know, you I'm going to go back to own it. I'm going to probably get a T-shirt made tomorrow that says own it. Because that's really, you know, what it's about. You have to own it. It may not be right now. It may take maybe a week. It may take a year. It may take two. But if you own it and you fully, fully have embraced your ownership to that, it will come, undoubtedly.
Wow, Michelle, that is great. Owning it, it does begin with owning it. And of course, being diligent. And being educated, you talked about reading blogs, staying up on the news, and then add to that getting to talk to professionals, agents that are very successful in REO. Well, those people aren't coming to your office. You're actually going to them. Let me ask you, what do you invest in terms of travel and fees that you're paying to attend the conferences? So many agents feel like that, you know, because there's no REO out there, why should they even bother go? You know, why should a person spend the money to go to Five Star, REO Expo, or any of the minority associations? You know, NAREP is coming up in August, NAREP, ARIA, they all have their national conventions coming up, and they will be filled with servicers and banks and asset management companies. And but yet, the word on the street is that, you know, REO is dead and short sales is what's happening. Why should I go and spend the money? But you've just made an argument, a very good argument, that it's about the relationships with agents that you'll, you know, new relationships and new agents you'll meet and the relationships with that person or persons that could result in opportunities for you.
Absolutely. And, Eric, I will remind you that I met you at Five Star, introduced by another agent. So that right there in itself is, you know, a testament to both of those things.
Right. That's right.
and you know, and for the person that's on the fence about going to a conference, choose wisely is the first advice that I'm going to give you. You have to look at it as an investment, and if you're going thinking that you leave the next week with an asset, save your money, save your time, buy some ruby red heels, and maybe click your heels 3 times, and maybe you'll end up somewhere. I don't know. But that's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. But if you look at how I choose which conferences I go to, as I look at the agenda and I look at the educational opportunities to say, wow, is there an opportunity for me to learn something here? And then I also look at the servicers, who's going to be there. And I don't look at it as, oh, do they have assets in my market, or, you know, so-and-so has this sold up. And first thing I look at is the educational opportunity. Like I said, if you can tell me that I'm going to walk away with some information that's going to blow my mind and enrich my business, I'll pay you for that. I believe it's worth its weight.
Right.
And if you tell someone, I'm going to teach you how to do property management from the bottom up and make you the best property manager, but I want you to pay $1,500 for this course, mm-hmm. you will have 10 people in that classroom. But if mm-hmm. you tell someone, I'm going to give you an asset, you're guaranteed to get an asset, I want you to pay $3,000 to attend this course, we're not going to learn anything, I'm just going to give away assets, you'll have 3,000 people in that course.
Wow.
So people want, they want to do the work, but they don't want to learn how to do it right. They don't want to learn how to sustain. They don't want to learn how to last and to make a career out of what you receive. And that's scary. And it's a reality. And that's why so many companies, you know, took advantage of real estate and specifically REO brokers with all these training courses, certifications, platforms, you name it. There's a business for it. And brokers get mad today and say, everyone wants to nickel and dime us. It's your fault.
Right.
It's your fault. You say, I don't want to spend the time to learn it and learn it right. I want the easy road, and I'll pay to go easy. And that's what happens. If someone's on the fence about which conferences to go to, you know, I don't want to endorse, you know, any over another. And I'll tell you, I've been to virtually all of them,
mm-hmm.
each and every one of them. I've been to small conferences where there have been 100 people. I've been to mega conferences where there have been 5,000 people. And
right.
the way that I value it, it's what did I walk away with that can enrich my business? And that's on you to decide. It's not about who you met, and maybe there's some opportunity there, and you that's got to be your cherry on the top, but it can't be your
right.
cupcake. And if you can truly look at the agenda and say, this is going to be worth my time, then go. Make the investment and go.
Right. Well, that's some wise advice for those who are considering the conferences that are coming up. And I would encourage you to heed the wisdom that we hear coming from Rochelle Jones. Rochelle, in the area of tactics and strategies, share with us real quickly before we go to our next break. You are a single mother. You've got a four-year-old daughter, and you are running a team, and we're going to talk about your team when we come back from break. But, you know, how do you do it? How early do you get up? How late do you stay? You know, how disciplined are you with your time to manage it all?
You know, I wish I had better vital signs, Eric, to report, but I do work a long days. I work every day. I have a phenomenal team that consists of, I've got a personal assistant, a couple buyer's agents, I've got a field team, and a transaction coordinator. And everyone works really, really well together, mm-hmm. independently. And we all embrace the business as being ours. They don't look at it as working for me. We work together because realistically, you know, if I can't go to a conference with peace of mind and know that, you know, something's being done and things, business is being done, then I'm stressed out. That means I'm creating a hostile work environment and my turnover is going to do that. It's just going to keep turning over. So, mm-hmm. well, I made a mistake of wanting to hire a lot of family when things first started picking up. And that comes from love, you know, and I'm sure there's a lot of brokers and agents out there listening right now that can understand that. Maybe you're working with your husband or your son or your daughter, and there are some teams that do that well. There's also a reason why there's a cliche that says don't mix business and family. I learned to do that too. So... you know, there you have to know, you have to assess your business as that. You can't hire on the gut. You can't run your business based on a gut feeling or because you want to do something warm and fuzzy for someone. You have to hire based on the need and the ability to get your job done. And that's a hard lesson learned, but that's where we are. And as our team continues to grow, we'll make sure that everyone is a good fit because it's not just about me. It doesn't matter if I like them and love them. It's got to matter to everyone on the team, and we work in that capacity.
Now, I want to learn a little bit more about your team when we come back from the break, but can you tell us, just going out to break here, what time do you get up in the morning? What time do you get to the office? And what time do you get home on average?
Okay. Mhm. Well, it's summer right now, so my daughter is out of school. So right now, I usually get to the office by 9. My assistant is here by 8. Mm-hmm. I get to the office by 9. I typically leave about 6 o'clock, and I'm going to pick my daughter up. I have learned this year in my efforts and desire to add work-life balance that she deserves my undivided time from that point until she closes her eyes.
Okay.
So that in most nights is about 9:30. Some nights it's 10 o'clock, and, you know, if she's had donuts and sugar all day, it might be But I have learned that it is unfair to her for me to work during the couple hours that she has at night with me. As soon as she closes her eyes, however, I'm powered on, iPod's running, and I'm working until, you know, maybe midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning. And it's not every night. It depends on what's going on, what we were able to accomplish during the day. And in my near future, I will even be able to scale that back even more and hopefully refine that, you know, again, better, better, better. It's about finding efficiencies. And as much as I used to do consulting on efficiency expertise, doing that for my own business is virtually impossible. I could tell you how to do it and be done by 7 o'clock and tell you that there's no reason you should be working at midnight. But it doesn't apply to me.
Well, on that note, we're going to take a break, folks. When we come back, we're going to talk a bit more about her team and her operation, and then we're going to dive into this year, what did she do last year in terms of sales and what have you, and get a, you know, to put this all in context of all that she has told us so far. So hang in there with us. We're going to take a break for about a minute. We'll be right back right after this commercial break. And we're back with Rochelle Jones, and so far we've covered her beginning, her experience, her tactics and strategies, and now we're down to her team and operation, and she's been sharing a little bit with us about her team and how she operates, how she runs her business, and one of the things she mentioned before we went to break was that after she puts her child down to sleep around 10, 10:30, depending on how much sugar and donuts she's had for the night, she's up working till 12, 1 o'clock in the morning. Rochelle, what are you doing at 12 and 1 o'clock in the morning on the computer?
Well, there's BPOs, there's MMRs, there's lots of new pictures. Also looking at, you know, one of the things that we try to do is stay closely exposed to, like, listings that close that day, things, homes that are in the area of where our listings are, because, you know, if one just came on the market, is it priced lower than ours? We don't want to wait until a marketing report is due to know that. You know, different clients have different requirements, and, you know, if you've got a justified cause, if the house across the street looks a lot better than yours and, you know, they're 20 grand less, you want that to sell before, you want your home to sell before that one does. So we try to keep exposed to what's going on in our neighborhoods where our listings are. And that's, you know, an after hours activity for us. But you name it, we're doing it. We're creating flyers. We're doing virtual tours. We're doing anything that doesn't require human contact on the other end that we can defer to a later hour if the day didn't permit us to get it done by daylight.
Wow. So this is not just you that's up till 1 o'clock in the morning. This is also members of your team. You guys are communicating that late at night to each other?
You know, I have such an amazing assistant, Eric, and I don't require this from her, but there are, like, we use shared email accounts often, and, like, I'll look and see that an email came through, and I'll see that she grabbed it at 11 o'clock at night, and it's just, you know, that's her part of own it. So I try to not put that responsibility on the other team members, and sometimes they just take it on their own. And I hope in the very near future, as I reassess and try to do a 360 on my team, to say that, you know, we will feel the need so that there is a better balance and better structure. So, you know, none of us really have to work at midnight, but if there's a necessary reason for us to do it, we'll get it done.
Now, Rochelle, why don't you explain to our audience what a 360 is? You've said that a couple of times, and it's something that perhaps more brokers should consider doing, broker owners and people who are running teams within offices.
Okay, a 360 analysis in the corporate world is an assessment of where your business has come from the year before, where you currently are tracking and trending, and where you need to go, and what mechanism is going to get you there. So you really just kind of dissect your business plan and say, okay, we're doing this, and it's not generating the results that actually allow us to move forward in this area. And it should be like, if you think of it as a wheel, Every action and every activity that you have should be linked to another that generates a specific result. And if it's not tied to that, then you might be doing it and doing it well, but it might not have a good purpose on your team. And like I said, I can do it for your team all day long. Doing it for my team mm-hmm. is a bit harder.
Right.
But being able to see, you know, where your full circle comes from and understanding, you know, what forward movement you have going, what's stopping you and delaying you, what are your pebbles along the way, and what's going to propel you to that next level.
Right. Well, you heard the saying, the cobbler's kids have no shoes. You're too busy taking care of others and not able to focus on yourself. Let's talk about your team. You have how many members on your team that are supporting your business?
We have five members on our team.
Okay.
Two buyer's agent, one, and we're actually bringing on a third one, but I have two dedicated buyer's agent, and then we also have an REO team within my office they're actually agents that are a branch or a leaf to my team, and mm-hmm. when my buyer's agents are overwhelmed with lead calls, they've been trained, they go through the same expectations, roles, and responsibilities that my direct team goes through, but they're able to work in their independent lane as agents and brokers, but they all roll up and have accountability and things of that nature to our team. Then we've got a field team that will, after we do our initial inspections, we'll go out and make sure, do weekly inspections on our properties, make sure that the lawns are being maintained and, you know, that the AC is set to an appropriate control and that the neighbors are happy. We've got a transaction coordinator that assists with file compliance, making sure that everything is turned in and that we're not going to have any issues with any paperwork. And then we have a marketing person that we're refilling right now that will take care of all of our virtual needs and virtual tours, our marketing, our website, and who did I miss? I think that was it.
So does this team allow you then to be, you know, focused on lead generation and business development? Or are you still finding yourself having to get down and dirty with the tactical aspects of the business?
Both. They're fully capable and operational, and it certainly allows me to do that. But I think what happens in this business is we get so busy that we remove ourselves from that, and then we become disconnected. I don't ever want to be disconnected, Eric. I might not want to be on the front line with the hose, but I don't want to be disconnected, because the minute that happens, you're dispensable. If your team left you tomorrow, you'd be lost in you know, on your knees praying, saying, "Lord, I promise I won't do it again." So I don't ever want to be that far removed from my business.
Right.
But they certainly are efficient and effective enough to you know, allow me to solely work on building new business lines. But when I make a commitment to that new vendor, to that new client, that homeowner, that asset manager, that we're going to get it done, I mean that. That's a stamp of approval and a signature for me that we collectively are going to get it done.
Right, right. So tell me about the number of assets you're currently managing. Given the team that you have, I can only imagine that you've got a lot happening right now. And can you give us an idea of what you're handling in terms of number of transactions?
Sure. We typically keep about 20... on a really good month, maybe 30 homes in our active inventory. And we, for the probably this year, probably close about maybe 10 transactions per month. And that, you know, certainly will, you know, continue to grow for us. And it's a steady pace for us. You know, I am not the biggest fish in this pond in my marketplace, and truthfully speaking, Eric, I don't want to be, because I know that fish, or that whale, we'll call him a whale, because, you know, when you're that big, you're a whale, tends to, you know, not be involved in the agent broker community tends not to be involved in the business. All you're doing is operations and managing operations. Well, you know, as much as, you know, as much as financially that might be inspiring, it does in fact take away and it depletes you from the reason you got into this business. And there is not an agent, you know, who cannot call my phone. And even if they, 90% of the time, they are going to get me. But if they don't, they will get a return phone call. And
wow.
I pride myself in that. And it's so funny when I hear an agent on the other line that says, I can't believe you return phone calls. you know, I do have a rule. If you don't leave a return phone number, I will not call you back. And I know
right.
with modern technology that the phone number is on my ID and that I can call you back. But I think just as business etiquette, if you want to return phone call, you should at the very least tell me how to reach you.
Right, right. That makes sense. Well, so you'd need that team. And, you know, when we come back from our next break, we're going to talk about the future. But you seem like you are well positioned to really take your business to the next level. So, but you just said you don't necessarily want to become a whale. So right now you're just a big fish, but not a whale.
I'm a goldfish.
You're a goldfish.
Well, you know, they said goldfish will grow according to, you know, its surroundings. If you get a bigger tank,
that's
it will
right.
get bigger. And if you don't, then it'll stay its own size. So I'm a goldfish, and I'm okay with that. I'm okay with that.
That's a great analogy. You are a goldfish. You're trying to grow. You're trying to have controlled growth where you can still provide the kind of service and be engaged at the level you want to be and be happy about that. And I think that's a good philosophy to have, to be a goldfish and grow according to the environment around you. Talk about for a moment the makeup of your business. So you're doing a lot of REO business, and I know quite a few agents that are listening right now that wish they had a consistent inventory of that many. And most of them do not. You can credit that to your lead generation, your follow-up with asset managers and what have you. But do you have a balanced business? How much are you doing in terms of asset management? I mean, not asset management, but traditional sales, short sales, and then REO. Can you break it down as a percentage? And, you know, where are you today? Where would you like to be?
Right now, we're at about 80% REO. We don't say no to any line of business. Now, we say no to some clients. We do say no, and you have to have that. But 20%, I would say, equally distributed amongst leases, property management, traditional listings, and we have a few commercial transactions as well.
Okay, all right. So where do you want to be in terms of your breakdown? I mean, are you happy with 80-20, or do you want to have more of a, you know, 30-30-30, or, you know, 40?
I would love for REO to be about 50% of my business.
Okay.
And for short sales to be about 15%, commercial 15%, traditional 20%, and then 10% under the other bucket, which would be leases, property management, things of that nature.
Okay.
The reason for that is it challenges you to stay on top of your game. This is a business of ebbs and flows, and you can't be a master of everything. You
right.
can't, you know, you can't, you can be good at everything, but you can't be great at everything when you're spread so thin. So believe it or not, we actually love REO. Their real estate as a whole, they say no two transactions are alike. Well, on the REO side, you've got even different pillars of REO. You've got you know, HUD, you've got asset management, you've got Bank of America, you've got, you know, hedge funds are, you know, really big and on the rise. So we love the dynamic of what that is. And they're not all the same. There is not necessarily consistency across the playboard. So we like that element of it. There isn't a true necessity to stay engaged with traditional real estate as well. And the we like seeing that short sales have, you know, basically grown hair, because that means that, number one, homeowners are aware of options. And that pleases us because that homeowner who may be selling their home short 3 years ago would have been a foreclosed property, undoubtedly. They didn't have the knowledge. They didn't have the resources. The banks were not flexible and accommodating as they are today. So we want to embrace that. And we do outreach as well. We do foreclosure prevention. And it's funny because I tell you, I want my business to be 50% foreclosure. Well, that's because it's going to be a there's a necessity with that. But we want to make sure as real estate professionals that we also arm you